You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, August 10th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Mark Dimenstein, the president of the United Postal Workers of America. Also on the program today, U.S. coronavirus cases passed 5 million. 100,000 kids test positive in the last 2 weeks of July. Meanwhile, Trump issues executive orders to push either lame or destructive corona relief measures. Then he promises to halt Social Security and Medicare funding entirely after the election. Meanwhile, Trump is looking to curb vote by mail via executive fiat. And no wonder. Joe Biden in the latest polls up in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania amid COVID concern. Trump's DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, states that Russia is actively helping Trump, but that China likes Biden. Protests reignite in Portland, break open in Chicago. Hong Kong officials arrest a media mogul in a crackdown. Dems introduce an environmental civil rights bill. And Friday night, we had more of an assault on the post office in what looks like to be a sort of a Friday night massacre. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here. Hope your weekend went well. It was a little bit hectic. Our guest today actually was on I filled in for Chris Hayes on Friday night. And one of our guests that we, or I should say one of the guests I had on there is our guest today, Mark Dimenstein. We were I think we had already booked him, but I obviously had a lot of questions to ask him after that. So glad he's here today. And of course, we've been talking about the assault on the post office. And one of the it has been a Republican wet dream for at least 10 to 15 years to privatize the post office. This is one of the agencies that I think, I don't know what kind of numbers it gets in terms of approval off the top of my head, but I think it pulls around 80, 90%. The post office in this country is, the postal system, I guess I should say, is really in many respects like a total wonder. There is really nothing that comes close around the world in terms of its scope, its efficiency, its reliability and consistency. And the Republicans have been wanting to privatize parts of it for a long time. They seem to have found a new, very innovative way of doing so, and that is from within. Yet there are some Republicans who don't seem to put two and two together. For instance, let's put up this tweet. This is a tweet from Nikki Haley. She was Trump's former ambassador to the UN. She's former governor of South Carolina. Many people think that she is a soon-to-be presidential candidate for the Republicans. I don't know, 2024, probably. And she is super pissed at the popcorn factory. And the popcorn factory, I don't know much about it. I am going to guess that they sell popcorn and all sorts of flavored popcorn as gifts that they send through the, you ready for it? The mail. And here is, but wait, let's go back. Here, let's read her tweet first. Nikki Haley, okay, pop at Popcorn Factory. Ooh. Two messed up birthday orders, missed delivery dates with no explanation. First time I gave you the benefit of the doubt. Second one tells me not to buy from you again. Disappointed nephew. Now, first off, I find it a little bit obnoxious when people do this. I understand it. I think I've probably done it once or twice where you try and use your, you know, your Twitter numbers to complain about a business. And I, and largely speaking, I have no problem with that. But I mean, she's clearly fishing for a free popcorn basket. But it doesn't seem to occur to her how the popcorn gets there. This is the thing is, Popcorn Factory, they may make popcorn, but they don't necessarily have a fleet of planes or trucks. And let's put up, let's look and see how Popcorn Factory, let's see, shipping information. We will ship your order via FedEx or the United States Postal Service to Target's arrival for a requested delivery date. I can't quite see the picture, but it says use overnight delivery to guarantee the delivery date. So I'm willing to bet that she used the U.S. Postal Service, and there has been a problem with the U.S. Postal Service over the past couple of weeks because of changes that have been made by Louis DeJoy, who is a former executive of a logistics company, a massive Donald Trump supporter, who has been running the post office as postmaster general for, I don't know, almost a month, has already instituted maybe a little more than a month. Instituted a so-called reform about a month ago that seriously inhibited the ability for postal workers to get mail to their addressees on time. And we will talk to Mark Dimenstein about those machinations in a moment. Meanwhile, speaking of the Postal Service, one of the ways that you can send mail or packages particularly at a time where you don't want to leave your house, we're adjusting to a new normal, at least for an extended period of time going forward. It's been made easy because of Stamps.com. Stamps.com brings all the mailing, all the shipping services, all the things you need right to your computer in the comfort of your home or your office. Whether you're a small business sending invoices, whether you're a teenager shipping out Depop stuff that you think you have a business because you take the clothes that your parents buy for you and you sell it and you think you're making money, when in fact all you're doing is, well, all right, I'm not going to get into that too much. But if you're an online seller who has that business model or any other one, or if you're working from home, you need to mail stuff, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. You can use your computer to print out official U.S. postage 24/7. That means at any time, for any letter, for any package, for any class of mail, and it doesn't matter where you want to send it, for anywhere you want to send it. Once your mail is ready, you just leave it with your for your mail carrier. They pick it up, leave it in your mailbox, or you could drop it into a mailbox. Schedule pickup or drop it in a mailbox. Like I say, you get great discounts with stamps.com, 5 cents off of every stamp and up to 62% off of USPS and UPS shipping. Stamps.com, no brainer, saves you time and money. Right now, listeners get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, type in Majority Report at Stamps.com, Majority Report. Also, this episode brought to you by Magic Spoon. Had some again this morning. I'm sure you remember being a kid, breakfast cereal, one of the best parts of being a kid. You get that cocoa or the blueberry or the fruity, milk changes all the color. As an adult, you realize what you were eating was really garbage. I mean, it may have tasted good, but it was garbage. Well, Magic Spoon is a new cereal company. It has discovered a way to recreate your favorite childhood cereals with 0 grams of sugar, 11 grams of protein, and only three net grams of carb in each serving. Magic Spoon offers 4 flavors based on the all-time classics, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry, plus a variety pack that lets you try them all. They've recreated the taste and the texture of those classic sugary cereals, but it tastes so incredible, you'll never guess it was healthy. It's keto-friendly, it's gluten-free, it's grain-free, it's soy-free, it's low-carb, and it's GMO-free. I'm not going to lie, I'm generally not a big cereal person, but I give the kids the cereal because they love it, and then I end up eating a bunch. It's delicious. It really is shocking. It is sort of, I'm now hitting the cereal a little bit more than I have in years, and I don't feel bad about it, frankly. There's no sugar. There's no carbs. You got a lot of protein in there. And they taste great. They have other flavors too. We're not supposed to talk about those right now in this for this campaign, but check it out. You will enjoy. Go to magicspoon.com/majority report. Grab a variety pack. Try it today. Use the promo code Majority Report at checkout to get free shipping. Magic Spoon's so confident in their product, it's backed with 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. That's magicspoon.com/majority report, code Majority Report for free shipping. I am telling you, it is the number one cereal of the Cedar household. My kids love it. They love it. It's sort of nuts. The way they get the sweetness too, it's from, I can't remember what it was now, like a guava plant or something like that. I can't remember, but it's check it out. Meanwhile, another sponsor, last sponsor for today, also another sponsor that, well, this one I use daily. Every time you hear the show, we're using the sponsor, at least what we're doing is a function of the use of that sponsor. And that is ZipRecruiter. Hiring's challenging. ZipRecruiter makes it so much easier. Now, for instance, Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a new game artist to grow with her education tech company. But then she switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference. You can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. And I know this because that's how we got Brendan, through ZipRecruiter. And I also know this part. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Brendan has retold the story many times. Sometimes we sit around the campfire and we tell the story. But the time that Brendan was online and ZipRecruiter reached out, sent him ads about this job for him. And by using ZipRecruiter's screening questions to filter candidates, Gretchen, and frankly, I, although they don't seem to be coming to me for the, I don't know why not, found it easier to focus on the best ones, find the right one. In fact, after posting her job on ZipRecruiter, Gretchen said she was honestly surprised she found so many qualified applicants so quickly and hired a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. Well, I got news for you. I found even more qualified people than Gretchen did. I don't know that for a fact, but I'm just saying it. I'm pitching. They should be using us in this. I keep saying that every time we do one of these ads. But with results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. We got a bunch of really quality candidates within the first day. frankly, you know, I was just like, well, I'll leave it open as I'm interviewing people. And Brendan came in. Brendan, they pulled in Brendan. It was towards the end of the process. And he just crushed it. And now, right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. You can go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MAJORITY, majority. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, when we come back, we'll be talking to Mark Dimenstein. He is the American Postal Workers Union president, which represents more than 200,000 employees of the U.S. Postal Service. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Be right back.
Find it.
All right, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Mark Dimenstein. He's the president of the American Postal Workers Union, which represents more than 200,000 employees of the U.S. Postal Service. Mark, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. Always a pleasure to talk about something that's so near and dear to the heart of the American people.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been talking about this assault that has been taking place on the Postal Service, and it's obviously much more heightened in the past, you know, couple of months, frankly. But let's start with this because, let's start first with, like, you know, how many employees are at the Postal Service? You represent the American Postal Workers Union. How many employees are there? How many of them are represented by your union? And I'm curious as to, like, you know, the demographics. Tell us a little bit about your membership.
Okay. Well, there's about 620,000 postal workers with this massive infrastructure that's in every state, every city, every town, every community. We have, within that, there's about 560,000 who are represented by unions. They're unionized workers, work under collective bargaining agreements that set wages, hours, and working conditions. We represent close to 200,000 of those 570,000. We represent the people that you go into the retail unit to buy stamps or to bring your packages, or pick up your certifiers, or pick up your mail if you have a post office box. We represent people that sort mail during the nights that most people never see, and drivers who drive trucks to get the mail to the letter carriers to get them to you or your home, and all the maintenance people that keep the facilities running and the machines running. And there's a lot of different jobs that we do. The letter carriers are represented by a different union as the rural letter carriers are. But we're all one entity, and we all are striving for the same thing. In terms of demographics, we have a very diverse workforce that represents the rainbow of the country. We have in our clerks, for example, are majority women now. We have a large percentage of African-American workers, close to 25% of the workforce that we represent. You have a lot of veterans. Well over 20% of the postal workforce of veterans is the largest employer of vets outside of the civilian part of the military. So and we got older and younger, more seasoned, less seasoned, and everybody in the between. So we are very proud that we're a diverse workforce. And look, we run on the principles, which is the right thing, of equal pay for equal work. It doesn't matter how old or young you are. It doesn't matter if you're male or female. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. We're doing the job. We're in it together. And we get paid equally. And I think that's a great thing about working under a union contract.
You know, I'll tell you, the thing about the post office in general that it is such a micro. Well, I mean, it's not that micro, but it is such a microcosm of exactly why you need government services and how they can sort of benefit in a multitude of ways. In addition, you know, as you're talking, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of great middle class jobs that provide the decent benefits. And again, employ a wide range of people in this country, but it's also doing a service that the private sector cannot do insofar as they are not going to deliver a letter from, you know, point A to point Z, essentially, you know, east wherever in wherever, you know, out in the boonies. For 40 cents, like there's no profit motive to do that. They cannot and would not do that. And this is what a government service does. It says the job number one is providing the service. Profit is secondary. And yet the postal service, up until very recently, has been very much self-sufficient.
Yes, and if I can back up, you raised a lot of good points there, Sam. I mean, one thing when you talk about the macro or the microcosm of the society and the essential service that you talked about, I think that's the essential service is really key. So it's postal workers who work under all the different union contracts are extremely dedicated to this public service mission. We work under a law that says we provide prompt, reliable and efficient services. And prompt means speedy, and it means reliable. And so that's very important to us. And I think I can speak for just about all postal workers. We treat the mail as if it's our own. We don't believe in delaying mail. We believe in going the extra mile. And that has been so clear and underscored in this pandemic, where despite the difficulties, the challenges, the dangerous times, just like other essential workers, postal workers have been out there proudly serving and really connected the country in a way that we could not have been connected during this pandemic without this government, public-owned, what we call a national treasure. And you're absolutely right. There's no private company. We have a saying, it's not named the United States Postal Business. That's for a reason. It's named the United States Postal Service, and that's for a reason. It's here to serve everybody on an equal basis. And as soon as you get into whether there's a profit motive there, then whether somebody gets mail, under what conditions they get mail, if at all, and what price they have to pay for it, then becomes whether somebody can make a quick buck. And the Postal Service is set up on a break-even basis to serve every community, no matter who we are and where we live. We call it the Universal Service Mandate, and it's a small d democratic right that's equally accessible to all of us.
All right. So let's start and just give us some basic facts about how the post office works in terms of funding, because I don't think that most people realize that the post office is self-sufficient or has been for an extended period of time.
Yes. The post office was spun off as an independent agency in 1970, following a historic nationwide postal strike. One of the things that happened after that is the powers that be decided it was wise, and it was wise, to take political patronage, cronyism, favoritism outside of the function of the post office, truly make it independent of political interference. And also, as part of that modernization, they set it on a course where they would run strictly off the revenue of postage and postal products, not off tax dollars. And for the most part, that has worked quite well. We've had two huge hurdles to get over in that process. In 2006, Congress passed, and it was bipartisan, unfortunately, but Congress passed a law called the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act that made the post office do something that nobody has to do, either in the public or private sector. And that is to pre-fund retiree health benefits, not retirement plans, but the health benefits of retirees, which the post office was paying as bills came due, just like every other company does. And they made them pay it 75 years into the future in a short period of time. That was for workers that not only didn't work at the post office yet, in some cases weren't even born yet. So it was an onerous, very onerous burden that put a lot of financial stress on the post office. It was manufactured, but nevertheless, at some point, that becomes real. It drained out $5.5 billion a year for the first 4 years of the 10 they had to pay it in. And then they weren't able to pay the rest. So in a sense, they owe a bill to the federal government for that, that unpaid funding. So that put a lot of stress on the Postal Service. But even then, if you took out this pre-funding mandate, the operations, the post office was generally at least breaking even, which is what their goal is. Break even, serve the people of the country, go to 160 plus addresses a day. Kind of amazing. And you had talked earlier in a comment about, you spend 55, you can take a letter from point A to point B. It's almost a miracle, and we take it for granted that you can walk into a post office, bring in a piece of paper, call a letter, and tell that clerk there, for 55 cents, I'd like you to take this to the other side of the country. And the clerk says, we will gladly do that. And then through the whole process of all the sortation and all the delivery, it gets delivered on the other side of the country. But I diverted for a moment. So the 2006 put a lot of financial stress in the post office. But what they're facing right now is an emergency with the COVID pandemic and its economic impact on the society as a whole, which also then affects the Postal Service. So naturally, and I'm sure your listeners would easily understand it, advertising dropped off, mail dropped off. I couldn't go get my four-year-old who had a birthday in April, her birthday card, and stick it in the mail because we were sheltered in place. So mail volume's off about 30%. Packages have temporarily made up for it because we're sheltered in place, but that's not going to last. So all the projections say that if there's not COVID relief, this economic impact will actually probably sometime next year cause the post office to run out of money. And that's something that we want to avoid. It's before Congress right now to make sure that that doesn't happen.
I want to just go back to 06 a little bit because, you and I spoke briefly on Chris Hayes' show on Friday night. And I brought that up, and you made the point that it was bipartisan. Now, like, I've gone back on this, and give me, you would know this better than I. I mean, I remember talking about it contemporaneously. It was a time where the Republicans controlled both the House and the Senate, as well as the presidency. But there were Democratic co-sponsors. I've gone back, I've looked at that bill. There were Democratic co-sponsors on that bill. And, but there was a voice vote, and it was unanimous consent in the Senate too. So it's hard to sort of tell exactly, where the lines were drawn on this, but certainly it passed, like you say, in a bipartisan fashion. What was the thinking at the time? I mean, because on one hand, I know what we were going through, and maybe this was like major failures of pension systems. Around that era. Like, I think it was United Airlines, and there were a couple of others, and the pension guarantee trust system wasn't working. And there was a real sense and awareness at that time that has been exacerbated, like 401ks weren't working. And so, what were the impetuses? Like, what was behind that? Was it people wanted to go and get on vacation? Because I know it was done right before break. Was it people weren't thinking about what the implications of this? I'm just curious, to the extent that you know what was behind that vote, I'd be curious to get your sense of it.
Well, I wasn't president of the union back then, so I don't have all the inner knowledge and workings of what was going on. But I just want to be clear, Sam, this was not pension issues. The fact that postal pensions are twofold, one's civil service and one's on FIRST, two different systems. The postal side was at that time was overfunded on the pensions. This was strictly the future cost of retiree health benefits. So the argument used, and I think it was an argument used by those who wanted to undermine the postal service, because the privatization thrust did not start with this administration, and it's not going to end with this right. administration. It has intensified. So it was all this idea, and the right wing pundits try to promote the idea that they want to protect the taxpayer, and therefore make it so that if the post office someday goes belly up, the taxpayers aren't going to be on the hook for these retiree health benefits, which wouldn't have happened anyway, because if the post office went belly up, which we don't think the people of this country are going to allow, not everybody's owed those benefits anyway. So it was all this idea, and it was a false idea because it's not taxpayer based. And if there are a lot of other assets that could have made up the difference. But it was all this idea, protect the taxpayer. Now I got to tell you, I came into office in 2013. I spent a lot of time on Capitol Hill and on both sides of the aisle. I haven't run into any congressional representative that either thinks it was a good idea. They a lot of them weren't here when it happened. Or even if they were, thinks looking back on it, that it was the right thing to do or that it worked. And so there is an effort in Congress to do away with that pre-funding mandate, which would certainly be a help. That was moving through. It moved through the House strongly. Half the Republican caucus voted to do away with that pre-funding mandate. So it was an overwhelming vote. It moved to the Senate, and that was right. And there's a bipartisan effort there. And unfortunately, it was right before we got hit with this tragic crisis. And that has taken a back burner.
Okay, so let's talk about that. And we should also remind people that the Postal Board of Governors can't make major, well, they can't raise rates, essentially. They can't create revenue, and tell me if I'm wrong, without congressional approval, which is also...
It's interesting, because one thing that happened in this 2006 law that I referenced earlier, the PAEA, Postal Accountability Enhancement Act, is they put a cap on postage rates, which may sound good on the surface, but it actually artificially kept rates probably lower than they would have been. We're very proud of the low-cost anchor that the public postal service is, and we want the rates to be reasonable for the people of the country. But the post office also has to have revenue. So there was an artificial price cap along with this pre-funding burden. And so they're bound by that price cap in terms of raising rates. Congress said you can only raise them so much. How much they raise them within that is not up to Congress. That's up to the Postal Service with oversight from the Postal Regulatory Commission, the PRC. So there was some effort in some legislative efforts that didn't move to try to deal with the pricing so there wasn't this artificial cap. The idea of CPI, the Consumer Price Index, plus a couple points beyond that, if necessary. But even without a price cap, postal rates have stayed with inflation. So a first-class letter costs no more in inflation-adjusted dollars than they did 40, 50 years ago. So it's a system that worked very well without a price cap, but it has created an artificial burden.
Okay, so let's...
Postal Service.
And you know, I mean, again, you made the point earlier, but it's you for 50 cents, you can't even get like a half a candy bar now for 50 cents.
That's right.
And so the idea that you can send a letter across the country is it's like magic on some level.
And it's sending it across the country with people getting paid decent wages, family-sustaining jobs, community-sustaining jobs. So it's really a system that works for everybody. And so higher-paid workers or decently paid workers did not interfere with the needs of the people to have reasonable rates. And I think that's an important point, because the privatizers, you know, those who want to undermine the post, I say, well, people are just paid too much. You can have decent living wage jobs and decent public services that help everybody, from the workers to the community to the postal patrons.
All right, so let's talk about the attack on the Postal Service right now. So there's a twofold situation. One is, like you mentioned, a function of the pandemic. Not all businesses are hurting, but certainly many are, and it all makes sense as to why the post office would be hurting at this point. Let's talk about what the administration has done in terms of its assault on them, because this is, you know, a relatively new thing, but there's been murmurs. I mean, you know, and this is something as a listener to Right Wing Talk Radio over the years, like the idea of privatizing the Postal Service has been out there floating around. It's sort of like almost like, you know, you see that and like, you know, privatizing the U.S. national parks, stuff like that. And it's as if like there was just this super opportunity right now to do it and they're taking it. And it's almost a twofer too, because I want to talk about the implications of mail-in ballots.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a broader view, this administration, and there's no getting around the facts. And we represent postal workers throughout the political spectrum, and we respect that. I respect that as their president. But there's no getting around the facts, however people feel about party affiliation, individuals, or anything else, that this administration is hostile to the public postal service. They put it in print. It's not coming from Mark Dimenstein. It's in the June 2018 White House Office of Management Budget Report. It actually has a proposal to do away with the public postal service and sell it to private corporations that would then run whatever postal services are left on a private profit basis. Now, fast forward to the pandemic. So we have that underlying thrust coming from this administration. We have now we have the pandemic. Congress is considering a huge multi-trillion-dollar stimulus package. The private corporations got over $500 billion in the CARES Act. They got more later, but they got $500 billion in the CARES Act. The House of Representatives at that time had an ask for $25 billion for the Postal Service, emergency COVID relief. That came from the Postal Board of Governors, unanimous ask, and it's a majority Republican Board of Governors. What happened? The Secretary Treasurer Mnuchin, on behalf of this administration, told Congress there will be no stimulus package if the Postal Service is taken care of. And what they did was even worse. They said, well, you're going to have $10 billion more of a loan with strings attached. But the Postal Service doesn't need debt. They need relief. And there's a huge difference between the two. Then following that, and our friends in Congress, for whatever reasons, did not flip the script on the administration, say, well, guess what? There won't be any stimulus package unless the post office isn't. Between then and now, the president has called the Postal Service a joke, which is an insult, an extra insult, but at any time an insult for all the postal workers on the front line. We've had over 2,500 people sick, and we've had 75 people pass away. We've had 40,000 people quarantined. So it's an absolute insult, and it's an insult to every customer. 91% of the people of the country have a favorable view of the post office. That means they use it and need it in many different ways, but however they use it and need it, they really do trust it and appreciate it. So now we're coming to a chance for Congress to right the ship, to do now what they didn't do at the end of March, to deal with the public sector within a stimulus package. So not just us. Think about the essential services provided in the cities, the counties, in the states, from sanitation to clean water to EMT to firefighters, schools, libraries. And so now is a chance to get it right this time. Certainly if they're going to take care of the corporations, they should take care of the public sector. And the House again passed $25 billion. It's now in negotiations with this administration. And we don't know exactly where it's at, but so far what we know is this administration is still opposing real COVID emergency relief. And in this case, Sam, it would be taxpayer-based. As I said, it doesn't run on taxpayer dollars. That's generally worked. In this emergency, it's not going to work. So we need appropriated taxpayer relief to get the public postal service through this emergency. And so That hostility, though, is an agenda.
Right.
Some in the news says, you know, President Trump doesn't like Bezos of Amazon, and some back and forth, and that's the essence of the hostility. I think that's a smokescreen. I think the real essence is that they really do have an agenda, and they want to take this national treasure, rip it off from the people, get their hands in the public till that creates $70 million a year in revenue, and use it for themselves.
You know, and in the second half of the show, I'm going to go through, I mean, it is the case that the Democrats in the House, you know, passed a bill calling for funding. And in addition, like you say, we need more funding for states and cities. I'm going to, in the second half of the show, talk about how, you know, the lack of leverage they have at this point was highly predictable, but, I will not force you to you know, take a stance on the negotiation powers of the leadership of the House in this instance. But I am curious as to, when you talk about the forces that want to privatize, give me a sense of like what privatization would look like, and then I want to go into what DeJoy has been doing in terms of like, you know. But what would privatization, you know, like when we say broadly speaking, like, yeah, obviously there's money there, but it seems to me, when I envision what would happen with privatization, is you would have the least, the most costly aspects still farmed out to the post office, and what the privatized delivery services would do is take the most lucrative stuff and do those.
I think that's 100% right, even if there is a shell left of the public entity. In the worst case scenario, there's no public entity at all, and we're completely at the mercy of whether somebody can make a profit, pay high CEO salaries, take care of, quote, shareholders. And so how could you possibly go to the most rural outposts or even a lot of urban centers? So it's not supposed to be based on where the post office can, maybe if they make money on that one letter, they're not supposed to do that. It's supposed to be, does the whole system work in a holistic way? So you may live in an urban center, but be sending a letter to a relative in the Kansas farmland, or vice versa. All the financial, then think about the medicines that the VA veterans rely upon, all the life-saving thing, all of this stuff. The post, so it's privatized. Do we then get our medicine? If somebody can make a dollar, how much more does that medicine then cost? And so if it was privatized, again, what's gone is that equal right to have a universal service mandate that has to serve. We're glad we have to serve every single person in this country, no matter who we are and where we live. There's no surcharges for distance. In many cases, like for flat rate priority boxes, there's no difference in terms of the weight. If it fits in there, it goes. All of that would be gone. A private company could put on surcharges. A private company can decide whether they want to go at all.
Right.
And the post office, rightfully so, can't do that. We go everywhere. And it's not a question of whether, or even that post office. Let's say it's a post office in a rural area. Well, if you just look at the one post office, maybe it doesn't generate enough money in that moment to justify, in some profit maker's eyes, to justify keeping the doors open. Postal Service is set up to have over 30,000 outlets, and it all equals out at the end, and it's all there to serve all of us. And it's a great system. Privatization just turns it over to a money-making machine, to Wall Street investors, and that would help a few companies. It would help a few private entities, but the people of the country would pay a terrible price. And if you think about e-commerce, yeah, the post office isn't the only one that handles an internet package, but it's the only one that has to take that package everywhere.
Yep.
A lot of small businesses, we actually get calls. Hey, if it wasn't for the post office, I never could have gotten my business started. If it wasn't for the post office, I wouldn't be able to run this from my home. And so, you know, just every aspect of life. And some people say the e-commerce day makes the post office less relevant. Some ways it makes it more relevant. It all depends how we use it.
Let's there is a board of governors of the post office, just in terms of like its leadership.
Yes.
This board of governors is now majority appointed by Trump. Is that right?
The entire board is now.
Okay. And this is my understanding is that this board has the least amount of institutional knowledge about the post office in, I don't know how long. You would have a better sense of that. They've just appointed a new postmaster general, not just, but a most recent one who is making news because he's come in and he has changed a couple of key, I guess, logistical operations by postal workers. Walk us through all this to give us a sense of what is being done, because in addition to following this stuff, I've had literally three or four conversations in the past week. One had to do with eyeglasses, new eyeglasses I was ordering. Yeah, it's coming in now like a week later because of the post office. A friend is looking to get some swatches, and she says it's stuck at the post office. There's real impact here. Tell us how they're doing it.
Well, you are right. We're hearing the same stories. We're talking to customers. I'm a customer myself. I've seen it. What the new postmaster general did, and you're right, there's no institutional knowledge on the Board of Governors or on the inner workings of the post office, and that includes the new postmaster general. So that's troubling. And what he did, he came in on June 15th. Within the first month, instituted some quotes cost-cutting measures. Again, he comes from the business world. This is not the United States postal business. And they took a few forms. One is he put out these policies, at least in general, to either cut out and eliminate overtime or severely reduce it. He put out policies to cut back on transportation, such as what they call extra trips. So if there's more mail to get from, we have these big sortation plants. So the mail gets sorted there, and then it often will get shipped to where the carriers are ready to go out on the street in your neighborhood. And extra trip might go because all the mail didn't fit on the first truck, or maybe mail came in just a little bit later, but it's due out that day. He has said we're not going to do those. There's pulling out a lot of sortation equipment out of the processing facilities, which we think is very questionable. They've also, although I believe they backed off of this, which is good if they have, they also started just arbitrarily reducing hours at the retail units. So if you're a big retail unit in a city, including his hometown and my adopted hometown, Greensboro, North Carolina, the main post office, they put out something and say, we're going to start closing at lunch. Well, if you're in a business area, that's often when people get to the post office. Hopefully that has been reversed. But, the result of all of this is it can't do anything but slow down and delay mail. That's what we're hearing from the workers. We've got information like there's one big processing plant that mail sat on trucks, 13 trucks for 5 or 6 days. We've had reports that in some places no packages went out to a particular carrier, in this case a rural letter carrier, for 4 days because all the stuff was getting backed up in the system. So that's the last thing that a postal worker wants to do. We're vehemently opposed. We have voiced our concerns openly to this new PMG. We have voiced our concerns to representatives in Congress on both sides of the aisle. This is just the absolute wrong path for the Postal Service. You don't bring in more revenue and more business by degrading service. You actually drive away business that way. There's a lot of things a post office can do to bring in revenue. There's a lot of new ideas they could try. Cutting and slashing is not one of them. And that's so far what has happened. And if I can say one thing about overtime, we're not, as postal workers, we're not wedded to overtime. We're wedded to a good living on a 40-hour work week. Overtime comes in to deal with fluctuations in the mail or to deal with understaffing, and the post office is understaffed. We would much rather have people hired and have more families sustained by good union jobs. But it also, we have to take into account the COVID world. 40,000 people have been quarantined. 2,500 to 3,000 have been sickened. Obviously, there's a lot of leave usage. And we've had other challenges with childcare, just like so many other workers. All of a sudden, schools are closed. So there has been more leave usage. No one would argue that that's not legitimate in a COVID world. And when you have leave usage like that, the hours have to get covered with the people who are already there, which is overtime hours. So to just arbitrarily cut hours when the work's still there means the work doesn't get done and the customer loses and stuff.
Now, I get what you're saying in terms of arbitrary, but I mean, this is a guy who ran a logistics company. It seems to me that he has a pretty good sense of, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's bringing in a structural engineer who knows exactly where to place the dynamite when he wants the entire building to fall. And, you know, to obviously, I think to anybody who runs any type of enterprise, you need, when you cannot predict day to day with 100% accuracy what the demand for certain services are going to be when you're running an operation that runs around the country, of course you need overtime. When you're in the middle of a pandemic where different people come up with, of course you need overtime. Like my sense is this guy is one of the most competent people that the administration has brought in terms of doing their job. And their job is to inhibit the service of the Postal Service.
Well, that's certainly our deep concern as well, Sam. You know, if you're going to privatize or try to privatize a public entity, you can't do it if the people support that public entity. And 91% of the people support the United States Postal Service. It touches each and every one of us almost every day, either individual, business. And so the only way you could carry out a privatization agenda, and again, it's their agenda. You know, you're not taking this from me. They put it in writing. The only way that you can accomplish that is if you defund and degrade to the point that people lose confidence in what they once believed in and that it doesn't serve them. It doesn't work. We have to go elsewhere, or maybe the private sector really can do it better.
Right.
So our deep concern is anytime you degrade service, they're setting us up for failure, and they're setting us up to break that tremendous link between the Postal Service and the trust that, in postal workers that the people of this country have.
When you talk to other union leaders, or when you sit in your office, or I guess on your Zoom calls, whatever it is, Do you guys have a sense of, like, you know, what the tolerance is? Because that's basically what I'm convinced that the agenda is here. We're going to degrade the service, and somebody's got an idea. There's some business maxim somewhere that somebody learned at business school or whatnot. All it takes is 3 months of degraded service, and you have dislodged the loyalty, or maybe it's 6 months or whatever. Like, do you guys... what is the plan to what is the assessment as to how long this type of degradation of service can continue without people losing faith in the post office? And B, what is the plan? And I guess maybe part of it is you coming on a show like this so that people are aware of what's going on. But what beyond that, what else is the plan maybe to mitigate the damage they're trying to do to the Postal Service relationship with, you know, the American people?
Those are both interesting questions. I concentrated so much on the second one. Tell me what A was again.
Well, A was like, do you guys have a sense of like how long tolerance?
You know,
for this type
I have no idea how long, but I have a saying, we call it the 4 D's. If you want to privatize, first you have to defund. And the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act did some of that. And unfortunately, this COVID pandemic, if there's not congressional relief, will continue to defund the Postal Service. Because again, it runs on revenue, not tax dollars. Then you degrade. That's the second D. You degrade the service. You slow down the mail. Maybe those eyeglasses don't arrive. Maybe the medicine. The VA just put out a concerned or at least people within the VA, that people got to start ordering their medicine sooner because they can no longer trust the post office to get it there in the set time that they're used to getting it because of these changes that this new Postmaster General has made. That's a sad commentary. And so after you degrade, then you demonize the workers. They just can't get the job done. The mail didn't come to my home. It's their fault. And then you're ready to dismantle and destroy the public institution. How long that takes, I really don't know. But anything in that direction certainly is very troubling. There's a 50, though, and that is that united with the people of the country, we think we can defeat those privatization plans and the plans that they're putting into place to set that path, you know, to set us down that path. So I don't know if it's 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years. I think people are already rightfully squawking. They should, pushing back. We had one small town in South Jersey somewhere. I don't even remember the name of the town. 600 patrons signed a petition in this COVID world. They signed a petition to not have their hours reduced at their post office. That we want that to be replicated all over the country. And people insist that their postal services stay strong. So what is the point B was, what's the plan? I think I in general, it's really to have a united front, so to speak. A COVID, you know, we're part of an organization called the Grand Alliance to Save Our Public Postal Service. Over 80 national organizations from faith-based, civil rights, community, labor. Interestingly, it was formed before the Trump administration. So we obviously already knew there was a thrust towards the privatization of public services. So one is a grand alliance with the people of the country to insist that the postal services stay strong. And very specifically, the plan is to have the public support to convince their representatives in Congress to make sure that there's COVID relief so we can get through this crisis. Right. And then from post office by post office, city by city, city council by city council, mayor by mayor, we are going to push back. The law is very clear. It's prompt, reliable, and efficient services. I looked up prompt in the dictionary. And prompt, one of the definitions of prompt is speedy, not slowing down mail. And this is a day that people want things sooner and quicker, not later and slower. So we are going to have to unite with the people of the country. And certainly we have good allies in Congress on both sides of the aisle. You know, for the people of this country, this is not a partisan issue. That 91% approval rating, the favorability rating. And by the way, in addition, this is really something too. And not surprising to us as postal workers. During the COVID, it's the number one brand, favorable brand, of the people of the country.
Wow. Well, I would
and so we have a lot of, it's not partisan, at 91% equal amongst Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Greens, Libertarians. It doesn't matter. And we shouldn't let Washington turn this into a partisan football either. So, you know, we're going to do everything we can to pressure. People can still call their Congress people as these negotiations are going on and make sure that we get through this COVID crisis and can get back to where we can be the post office that we need to be with everybody. In this election season, that's going to be more important.
Well, I want to ask you about that vote by mail. And I know you got to get going here in a minute, but I want to ask you about the vote by mail. And I want to say, like, also, this is one of those issues where I think an outpouring by the American public has a lot of resonance, because I think there is a real attempt to attack the Postal Service in a way that is quiet. And if there's a sense by politicians that the American public is aware of what's going on, I think it's going to have more impact than on other issues. But two things. One, let's just, two last things. Vote by mail. Can the post office do it in a non logistics guy trying to handicap the post office? Can the post office do it? Can the post office just in the main handle like a rush of ballots across the country? And is there a question about that in this circumstance?
So the answer to that is unequivocally, it's not a problem. those who want to discourage people from voting by mail, I have had two basic charges. One is it's fraudulent and corrupt. We can get into that after I answer the one you asked. And the other is that somehow there's so many letters that are going to go into the mail, the post office just can't handle it. That's an absurdity. We handle almost 500 million pieces a day. In seasons of, you know, greeting card time or Valentine's Day or the census or CDC medical information that went to every adult in every household, we can handle that stuff in a heartbeat. And that came from one place. Votes are run by the state. So each state, so let's say there's 100 million more ballots that end up in the mail. I don't know what the figure's going to be. 31 million people, I think, in the last election voted by mail. So let's say it triples. Well, that's not in one place. That's in each state. And it's not the same day. It's as people ask for their absentee vote by mail ballot. The capacity of the post office is huge to handle mailings. We can handle them in a heartbeat. Just think about how many mailings you get. I mean, when I say you, I'm talking to the listeners. Around election time, from the candidates, that influx is far greater. Last election, I'm in D.C., in the city council election, I probably got 20 mailings within 3 or 4 days, multiple mailings often by the same candidate. They all got there on time. So in terms of the capacity, it's literally a piece of cake. If there's ever a hurricane, a fire, a flood, a tornado, an outbreak of COVID, mail just gets moved around. There's processing plants all over the country. That's something we can do in our sleep, and we do it all of the time. So that people should rest very secure that any influx can be handled.
And you were going to address fraud. I can't imagine people think that the fraud that I still can't quite figure out exactly how the fraud's supposed to be committed. You would need to know who is not sending in their ballot, and you would need to create falsified ballots and then figure out who's not sending in their ballot so they don't, there's not two of those ballots sent in. Like I'm not even sure how that would happen in a way that couldn't be discovered. I mean, anybody can try anything, I guess.
That's right.
But,
that's right. Sam, you're 100% right. We can only go by history and what the experience shows. And what the experience shows is there's tons of checks and balances. There's signatures that get checked. There's voter rolls that get checked compared to databases from the Postal Service. The states that do this, 5 states do this by law. Oregon has been doing it for 19 years at every level of their elections. Over 100 million ballots cast in 19 years, 15 cases of voter fraud. That's less than one per year. Compared to how many people are disenfranchised because they can't get to a polling place because it's a work day or the lines are too long or there's not enough machines. So it's a system that's proven to work. Utah has been voting, I think, for 5 or 6 years, vote by mail. 0 cases. California. It's not by law, but it's voluntarily. Half the people in California vote by mail. And so there's absolutely no basis. In fact, I say the claims that it's a fraudulent system, those claims are fraudulent. And, you know, if people want to delay elections, as President floated an idea, it's outrageous. It's a step towards tyranny to raise that somehow an election should be canceled or postponed, making the Postal Service and postal workers as some kind of scapegoat, or there's something wrong with the results if everything is not counted on November 3rd. That's not the point. The point is everybody has access to the ballot box, and then that vote counts. So we're very confident. Look, we've been doing vote by mail for generations. We're proud of it. Postal workers are not, as a group, are not beholden to any political party, any candidate. This is part of our civic duty and civic responsibility. It's private and secure. It works. And by the way, ballots do get priority. And the Postal Service is set up to help states. And the new PMG, to its credit, has said that they're going to have full, the states will have full support once again. And we need to hold them to his word on that. So it's really a terrific system. It's more and more popular with each election cycle. People don't have to wait in lines. They can think about their vote a little more. They can vote in their own home. They could either mail it back or take it to a drop-off point. And now in this pandemic, literally, this is going to be a question of having access to the ballot box and being able to exercise our cherished right to vote. And we're here to serve. We're confident we can do it. We certainly want to make sure the mail's not slowed down, because that affects everything we do. But the states are going to have to run these elections right, get ballots into people's hands in time. And we urge people to vote quickly.
So, Mark, lastly, let me ask you this. In my fantasy life, it's a little bit narrow and myopic, but in my fantasy life, I imagine that the next president comes in, Joe Biden comes in, points a new board of governors. The new board of governors says, not only are we going to reverse some of these things, we are going to institute something like postal banking. And we're going to offer, you know, some very basic banking services. Since we already have all these retail outlets all across the country, it will provide banking services for people who are unbanked, provide convenient banking services for people. Like, what, I guess wild is my fantasy life, Mark? Sorry to put it in this context.
Well, I have some of those same fantasies as you, although I don't want to start a rumor.
Right. No, I understand.
No, the question of expanded and enhanced postal services is really the way to go. And we've been pressing and pushing the postal service to try some new things, even if they do what's called pilot programs. And we're not going to wait for a new board of governors, a new president to continue to press that. It's a wonderful place to do some expanded financial services like paycheck cashing, put it on no-fee debit cards. These are things that post offices, posts are doing throughout the world and can easily be done here. And it would really, the other part of our mission under the law is to bind the nation together. Those are the exact words. And that includes a lot of things. And to be able to provide some basic financial services to hardworking people so they're not getting ripped off. There's 80 or 90 million people in this country, the estimates are, that don't have access to regular banking. Either they have no banking or they get stuck in this predatory lending, check cashing industry. And so it would be a great counter to that, another way that the public sector can serve. We could have electric charging stations for cars and a lot of post office. We can have an electric fleet that would be very environmentally sound, and that could be shared with the public. So there's just so many things, money transfers, ATMs, all of those things the post office should do. And look, it's not going to be for free, but it's not going to be a ripoff. So it would bring in revenue, and it makes the public entity that much more relevant in people's lives. So I don't think that's a fantasy at all. There's some movements within some communities around the country, such as the Bronx and in the area of Cleveland, asking just for this. There's a lot of people in Congress who are also pressing this, and postal workers are excited about doing these kind of services for the postal patrons. In terms of the political environment, look, it shouldn't be any secret to anybody that if we have a president of the United States that's calling us a joke and saying the post office should raise package rates on the people in this country 4 and 5 times, which of course would drive away, it would not only hurt the customer, it would drive away a heck of a lot of business and revenue. So that's another way to destroy and undermine the postal service. When those things are going on, certainly our executive board, I can only speak for them, do want to make a political change. Some of these board of governors, Sam, have terms. So a change in the presidency, they all have terms. A change in the presidency doesn't change the Board of Governors, but there are some vacancies and the Board of Governors could improve. But I have to say, in all honesty, the Board of Governors made the unanimous right request for COVID relief and robust COVID relief. So that's an indication on that question they were doing the right thing. They seem to be going along, which to me is the wrong thing, on these policies of slowing down mail. And they need to jump in on that as well. But we hope in a better political environment that's more supportive of public services, more supportive of workers having unions and union rights, and more supportive of new ideas and what the post office can and should be, that things will get better. So but whether there's a change or not, we're still going to be the American Postal Workers Union.
Well,
still standing for justice in the workplace, justice in our communities, and to keep this wonderful national treasure vibrant and strong for generations to come, which is what the people deserve.
Mark Dimenstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on, Sam.
All right.
Take care.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break and head to the phones and head to your IMs and some video clips and just fun, ladies and gentlemen, just so much fun. Now, I do want to say this. We did get an email and, you know, we try and read all the emails that we get. It takes a while. We get a ton of them and sometimes they fall through the cracks. We did get an email from a guy who was calling in with, you know, wanted to have an argument with us about the way that we're covering COVID. And, you know, I welcome everybody to call in. And, you know, if you, well, this is no guarantee, and I don't want to get a bunch of emails, but if you put your area code, we can see area codes. And so if you put your area code in, we have a better chance of taking you because, you know, right now, even though I've asked people, we already have 10 people on the line. We're not even at the phones yet. So, but we welcome all calls. We do it differently than other shows. We invite people. You got an issue with what we've said on the show? You got an issue with me? Call in. I'm more than happy to take the call. Maybe you could even argue. I'm desperate to get into an argument with you.
It's kind of the business model.
It's the business model, but it's also the reason why we did that with the business model is because it's also like, you know, a psychological issue I have. So that's
how to succeed in this country.
That's right. You go with what, you know, they always say, like, you know, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life.
And do what you're unhealthily fixated on.
Yeah.
Everybody called in every day and there was someone who could get through that had an argument with me. I would feel like I haven't worked a day in my life. Jamie is here with us. She's going to join us in the fun half. She's going to tell us what's happening on the Antifada. Let me just first say, check out Nomiki's show. Find it at patreon.com/ the Nomiki show. You can also find the Nomiki show on YouTube at youtube.com. The Nomiki show. She's had some great stuff as of late, and particularly this is, you know, as you start to hear more about what's happening with things like the DNC and whatnot, she has a very, very good sense of what's happening on the inside. And also, you know, follow her. Just if you've been watching her show, you know, the election of Cori Bush, it's not necessarily a surprise. And certainly you had a much better awareness of who she was. Because she was one of, I don't know, early on Nomi's show. Jamie, what's happening on the Antifada?
Well, this week on the Antifada, we had on our very good friend Virgil Texas for a bit of discussion about the COVID crisis and also this latest trend that we've seen of older leftists scolding younger leftists in open letters that they need to support Joe Biden. Why are they doing this?
Has there been new letters?
Serve? A new one just dropped in The Nation the other day, signed by a lot of older leftists who I really respect, even though I might disagree with them on this issue.
This is not the SDS one.
No, this is a different one. There was also one in the New York Times written by a guy that we've had on the Antifada, which I did not even have on my bingo card for this year.
That you would have a guest that would say vote for Joe Biden?
Indeed.
You never thought you'd have a guest on who would say vote for Joe Biden?
Not in the scoldy way that he did it. It was
in the letter signing way.
in an open letter. It was very weird. Kind of made me feel like I didn't know which way was up, but I think we had a pretty good discussion of these things, and that's coming out on Wednesday. Also, we put out a bonus on Friday in which we gave our friend Jake Flores a chance to address and rectify a recent scandal that erupted around him. I am, of course, talking about a photo he posted on Twitter where you can see his bookshelf and a lot of uncracked spines are on there. So they did a little spine check with Jake and talked about Moshe Postone and the abolition of time. So check that out too, folks. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
So wait, he had a lot of books that he hadn't opened. He just left.
Yeah, you don't want to dig too deeply on this one, Sam.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's true. I don't. But I do want to talk more about the letter thing because we'll do that in the fun half.
Can't Matt, wait.
What's happening on TMBS and a Literary Hangover?
Yeah, TMBS tomorrow night, me and David and Alicia will be interviewing, I think Alicia, maybe just me and David, will be interviewing Dr. Drew Mikhael. He's been on TMBS a number of times. He's from Lebanon. He's studying in the UK somewhere, but we're going to be talking to him about Beirut and, you know, the sort of tragedy there. And so, yeah, tomorrow night at TMBS, normal time, David, Alicia, and I will be hosting. And Literary Hangover, we'll be doing something maybe later in the week.
Just a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget, check out the AM Quickie going gangbusters. It's getting out earlier and earlier. People are really talking. It's really, really catching on fire. I feel like, I mean, this is all actually true, but I feel like I can't say it without sounding like Donald Trump. I don't know why. More people are talking about
it. It's how you market stuff in this country.
I understand. Ugh.
Pretty soon it'll be the nighttime quickie.
What's that?
You keep moving it up earlier and earlier. Pretty soon it'll be the nighttime quickie.
Well, I mean, eventually it's not inconceivable that we would do like a, you know, I don't know, a 7 p.m. Version or a 6 p.m. version, maybe a 5 p.m. version. I don't know. One that you could have like on your car ride home. Maybe 4 p.m. I look. Who knows?
We're taking over.
And we just do, or we could just do like a 24/7 of the same thing over and over again. Like all right. Okay, folks. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. See you in the fun half. Music? Bueller?
It was playing for me. I need to hold on 1 second. Second time that's happened.
Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh.
Rand Paul.
I had my
my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're not paying.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. Are you guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.